Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
ただいま初めて気づいた。
恋に落ちたのだな。
24時間君君君。意識
せざるを得ません。
なんだ。いつもと違う君と。
二人。
幼稚な会話まさか。
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of our one-on-one interview series. This is your King David Duncan Van Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in today. And I am very excited to welcome to our program a voice actress who's brought to the mic some of my favorite anime characters of the last few years. From feline caretakers and cat girls to master chefs in training and the smartest 8-year-old scientist around, she's played just about any kind of character you could ever dream up. I'm very happy to welcome from Dallas, Texas, and fellow member of the first names always being mispronounced club, Miss Jade Saxton. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for the awesome intro. Now I'm like worried that I'm going to say your name wrong.
It's all right. It's okay. You have 4 or 5 times to mess up before I get mad. It's all good.
So it's not what it looks like. So I have to guess?
No, it's Evan. It's all good.
Oh, I was going to say Evan, but you maybe were thinking it was like Yvonne or something.
No. So my last name is French. You can say the first half of my last name, but not the second half how it's written out.
Oh, is it? How do you say it? Borgo?
Borgo, yes.
There you go. I have a really good friend who's been my friend for like 20 years who lives in Paris right now with her whole family.
There's actually a Borgo Avenue right in Paris. I've never been there myself. I have some relatives who have. They have the sign to prove it, or the picture rather.
Nice.
Yes. So, first off, how are you holding up during this really crazy moment in our lives?
I mean, I really don't have too much to complain about. Like, I'm really healthy. My partner is healthy. And then my close family and friends are all really healthy. That being said, you know, it's an emotional journey, I think, like this whole process. And you know, like that they're basically saying, you know, what we're going through and what we've been going through is grief. Like, we're kind of grieving for our old lives a little bit. So while I may not be like directly affected, like with a sickness or anything like that, I still think it's good to honor like your emotions and your feelings about how you're doing with it all. So it's been a little bit of a roller coaster. It's been an adjustment. But, you know, mostly I've been doing pretty good.
I'm glad to hear. I know it's sometimes it can be a very big challenge dealing with what's going on right now. But as long as you're very self-conscious and so long as you're keeping yourself safe and healthy, that's the best way to come out on top of all this.
Absolutely. And we are. My mom got me like a really cute little Harry Potter face mask. So I was excited for that. I had a kitty cat one before that, but, you know.
Was it like a Nekopara kind of style, the kitty cat one?
So it's a black, I think someone actually gave it to me at a convention one time. It's black, and then it looks like it has the little kitty cat smile with the pink nose and the whiskers on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have a couple friends who have that kind of a setup, yeah. that design. You know, during this time, I know some dub work is continuing on, you know, right now in many of the actors' homes. So, like, what kind of challenges have you come to find working from home compared to, like, the studios at Funimation or Sentai Filmworks?
Man, I'm just, like, so freaking impressed by our team of engineers and creative people. Like, they came up with this amazing, like, home kit setup. And what's amazing is that Funimation is actually, you know, sends these kits out to the actors. So even if you don't have a home studio setup of your own, like, they're helping to provide that, you know, which I think is pretty amazing and unprecedented. Like, I don't know of any other studios that are doing that. That's not to say that it's not happening. I'm unaware of that. And the whole process of doing it all too has just been like a daily learning process, you know, of we're always finding new fixes and different ways to do things. And it just kind of, it takes the whole team, and it's kind of brought us all closer together. You know, for a little while we weren't, you know, really doing much of anything, just trying to figure it all out and feel it out. Because I think at the beginning, no one really knew how long this was going to last, you know?
Right.
But now, I'm currently directing from home, directing Nekopara, which they did put up one of the episodes that we were able to complete from home, episode 9 of Nekopara.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're continuing to dub that one. And then I've also got a kit at home with me because I've been dubbing My Hero Academia as an actor. So I've been on both sides of it, and it's really interesting. It's really fascinating. It's very, very challenging. You know, it's just like learning 20 new things at once and like just doing the best you can. And I am getting better at it, especially the directing side, because I've been doing more of that. The acting side, I still get really nervous and sweaty in my closet, like, you know, trying to figure it all out. Because while I'm good at coaching people through that process, like actually doing it, you know, is a little more nerve wracking.
Have you had to like soundproof your closet, or like have you had to like play like the waiting game as to like, okay, now is the good appropriate time to actually record this line here?
My closet luckily is pretty, for the most part, insulated from like outside noise. Like it's in a really good location in my apartment. It's not like super close to a window or a door or anything. And luckily I haven't had any super noisy neighbors. Now I did have to soundproof using, I just decided because my laundry room is also in my closet, and I knew that that would kind of create some weird resonance against the metal. So I, in a pinch, I asked my fiance to help me nail this quilt to the wall. So we nailed it on both sides. And then when we need to use the washer and dryer, we just like roll it up like a burrito and tie it up. So it's been kind of nice because it can roll it up and roll it down as needed, like a weird little curtain. But the rest of it's pretty insulated with all of my clothes. So it's worked out pretty well. And like the sound quality has been pretty impressive with the setup that they have for us.
I think you have unwittingly given our listeners some great advice regarding how to soundproof their recording space if they ever want to do voice acting like this.
I mean, it's every space is different. That's what's so fascinating. Our engineers are amazing at, you know, kind of helping to EQ everything on the back end and make it sound great and help people soundproof as best they can, because everyone's setup is different. But that one worked for me, so.
Terrific. So my first, like, main question about voice acting, and I know it's a question you've probably been asked many, many, many times over, and that is, what inspired you to get into voice acting?
I have wanted to be a performer basically my whole life. I started out singing in church and stuff like that, and doing plays in church when I was very little. I remember being on stage, like, at the age of 3 and 4. My father was a singer, and so I think it kind of came naturally in that way. I continued on doing that and doing theater and music. And I have a degree in vocal performance and music and singing. And that's kind of what my passion was. And it really kind of shifted more to theater halfway through college. And at that point, I was, you know, too far into my degree and I needed to finish it. But I kind of kept up with that love and that passion. And, you know, when I met some people who knew more about the voiceover industry and knew more about Funimation, that's where I kind of had my opportunity to have an in with that. Because I just love performing in all sorts of capacities. Like I love singing in bands, singing in choirs, doing plays, doing musicals, doing film. I just any sort of avenue that was going to lead to performance and, you know, playing around. Like I really loved it. So this was just another opportunity. And it's just one that sort of took off for me. I just sort of like for whatever reason, I don't know why, like I wasn't really good at the technical part of it to begin with, but like I had a good knack for just like being willing to try out and like go for it. And I had a lot of performance experience going in. So at least I had that going for me. It took me a while to learn the technical side of things, though.
You've mentioned your love of theater, of musicals and plays, and I'm a big theater buff. Well, what stands out for you as like your all-time favorite musicals or even your favorite plays?
Oh my gosh, it's so hard. I really think I loved Spring Awakening so much. That was like,
It's the Bitch of Living.
Yeah, I listened to that album like so many freaking times. I was pretty obsessed with that. Plays, I don't know. I feel like it's harder to like find a favorite, but I can definitely say one of the best ones I ever did was called The Nether, and it was like a very post-apocalyptic, like futuristic, weird, like questioning of morality in a space that's like online and not real, like virtual reality, you know?
Mm.
So it got real weird and wishy-washy and very cool, like, you know, when you can have an avatar and you can have an identity that's nothing like your own, like, where's the moral boundary, you know? It just asked all those sorts of questions. So it was really interesting and cool.
It does kind of sound like, I'm sure that it sounds like a few anime series have had like similar like premises like that with like avatars and the real people behind it.
Mm-hmm. It really does kind of like make you ask like the questions about like what's okay and what's not. Like if you don't really know anything about this person in real life, you know, they could be anyone or any age, you know?
Absolutely. Now, before you got into voice acting, I'm sure you've done various jobs to like help pay the bills and whatnot. What would you say was the strangest pre-voice acting gig you've ever had?
What was the strangest? I don't know. That's a tough one. I feel like I've always worked multiple jobs and I still do. I think like one that's coming to mind wasn't really doing anything weird, but I would do these sort of performer gigs where they basically just want you to like be a character for a party, not necessarily like a Disney. I never did the Disney princess parties. Those look fun. Like I have friends that do those, but it was like some rich people like fundraiser situation where they would like want you to dress up. And I think one time they did a Cirque theme and they like airbrushed my body and my face. And I basically had on like this Vegas, like showgirl thing to look like a sea goddess of sorts, like
oh, wow.
Sea goddess thing. And it was like, I looked amazing, but I've never been more uncomfortable in my whole life. And I feel for all of those Vegas showgirls who wear the headpieces that they wear. Cause like I was in pain for days afterwards after having worn those heels and worn that headpiece. And like someone had to help me walk around. Like I couldn't.
You mean like the ones that are like almost like 3 foot tall, like those yeah. size ones.
It was insane. Yeah, it was really crazy. And so I've done several things like that, but that was the most uncomfortable one that I had ever done. Even though I looked really cool. The pictures were amazing. The experience was not.
Wow, I wouldn't say that's a strange gig, but it is pretty impressive. But at least you don't have to do that really much anymore.
Nah, I'll pass on those.
Yes. Now, when it comes to voice acting, and do you have a specific routine you like to perform before the record button is pressed? Like, depending on what kind of character you play, is there like a specific routine you like to do?
You mean like a warm-up of sorts or something?
Yeah, like a warm-up or something that gets you into the mindset of the character right before you press the record button.
Well, most studios, if it's a character that I've done before, they have reference files. And so they'll play those reference files for you so that you can kind of talk along and like get back into that mindset and that character. And depending on the character, sometimes like I make up like a physical stance for them, or I have a looseness. It's just sort of a physicality thing for me, like how that character is going to stand, or where I'm going to feel them in my body. If it's going to be like a looser shoulder, if it's going to be like a cocked head, it's something physical that kind of helps me get into that. And then just hearing the voice. We usually have to go when we're not at home. We have to go from, you know, studio or to studio, kind of hopping around doing different things. So I don't do any sort of like extensive, like long warm-up situation. I just kind of remember the voice and get the physicality in my body.
Now, I'm sure one role that you find a much easy way to get into is the role of Carla on Fairy Tail, because you've been playing her for nearly a decade.
Yes, though she's kind of hard. Like, I feel like I can get into it, but her voice is so specific that I feel like it's easy to slip in and out of. So I have to stay vigilant with her. And it was really hard for me at first because I would want to like push it too far, and just finding that like middle ground and that balance. And then it got interesting towards the end because, you know, her physicality changed. And then every time she was in that human form, I would be like, what am I supposed to do? Like, I don't even, like, it just felt wrong. It felt so wrong. I was like, who even is she? And so we tried to change the voice ever so slightly so that it made a little bit more sense. But like, surprisingly enough, even though I've been playing her the longest, like something about her is it took a while to stick.
So now that the show has come to an end, what have you felt you've learned from playing a character like Carla? Like, what has playing Carla taught you, as not just as a performer, but as a person?
As a person? I mean, that show overall, like just the loyalty and the friendship that she has with Wendy and her guild, like that's beautiful, a beautiful thing to me, like just kind of seeing that like through line for her with Happy and with Panther Lily and with Wendy and her friends, and also her just kind of coming into her own and like not being just like the stiff sassy cat, like having layers of emotion and feeling and realness. I really enjoyed those aspects of her a lot. Playing her as a character, I mean, she, like you said, is the longest form character, or the character that I've been playing the absolute longest thus far of my voice acting career. So it's just been like cool to always get to come home to her, you know, whenever that happened, and to always know that like that I was going to get to see her again and see what she was up to. And like, cause I really love long form shows. Like that's why I really love television. Mm. So I love that aspect of it. And I really think I grew through her as well. Like I grew up kind of playing her, like as far as a voice actor goes, cause she was like one of my first major roles. And so I really got a chance to, you know, go from just novice to more expert with her.
That's what I liked about the character of Carla, because when you first meet her, she kind of seems like she is that kind of stuck up character, but as the series progresses, she lets loose a little bit more, and you get to see what kind of feline she really is, especially towards the end, like you said.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Now, moving on from a big show that's ended to one that's still continuing, let's talk about Food Wars, where you play Megumi Tadokoro. How has your portrayal of her changed the more she's become evolved and more confident in her skills?
It's always cool when she gets confident, but I feel like she always has a little bit of an underlying note of nervousness about her. Like, that's just part of her being to me. And that's part of what playing her is like to me. Like, she's always going to be a little bit like mumbly, nervous energy kind of person. But, you know, it's been cool to like see her, you know, have a little bit more of an opinion and like a view on like what she wants to be and who she wants to be through her food. You know, and be able to help her friends around her in their kind of quests too. So, but it's always, I like that aspect of her. I like the nervousness, like the way she's probably going to mess something up before she gets it right, you know?
Right.
It just shows you that, you know, it does take practice and hard work to get better and to get where you want to be.
Absolutely. Has the show made you a better cook in real life?
No, 100% no. I know Blake, when I talk to him and when we do panels, he plays Soma. I know that he has tried a lot of the recipes and is like a really good cook and can do all of that. I'm not a bad cook. I don't really get into it. Like, I have to really have a wild hair to be like, I'm going to do like this big thing. Other than that, I usually just want something simple and easy because I love food. I love eating food, but I usually want someone else to make it for me.
Right. So you're like the big foodie.
I love eating it more than making it.
All right, here's a food-related question. Sentai Filmworks or Funimation, who has the better craft service table?
Well, I don't... Neither have, like, what your standard, like, what you would think of, like, on a film set craft service table. For a while, I would probably have to have said Sentai, just because they had, like... I can't remember if they still have it. I think they do. But, like, an actual soda fountain at their studio... You know, like, not just like bottles or cans, but like a literal fountain.
Oh, wow.
Which I kind of love, which is fun. If you're into like Coke and all that, you know, but like at some point, at least, well, I want to say in the past year, Funimation kind of did an overhaul on all of their snackage and food. And they brought in, like, more healthy things, and then they made it all free, which was amazing. So I got to go with Funimation that's going to win on this one because it's all free. I think there might be some free stuff at Sentai, too, but the array at Funimation right now is pretty good. And they always have bananas and apples and these amazing banana chips, too, that are really, really good. And then if you are having a day where you just really need some freaking chocolate, they have all the Kit Kats you could want, and I love Kit Kats.
Maybe you could thank Sony Pictures for the better food.
Maybe, or definitely our new CEO who, like, just really wanted to, like, kind of give everyone a treat that way.
Yeah. So I know that the original voice actress of Megumi, Minami Takahashi, was supposed to be at MA Boston this year, which... would have been a cool moment to have both actors there in the same event.
That would have been cool.
So,
I didn't know that. Now I'm even more sad.
Yeah. But I'm curious, how often do you get the chance to meet your Japanese counterpart?
It's very rare. I think just because, I don't know, just like the being able to cross paths already is just kind of difficult. But also I think, you know, not every convention has Japanese guests, at least in the United States. So I think it's harder. And sometimes when they do, it's just one and maybe they're a guy. And, you know, or there's just so much anime out there that like meeting your exact counterpart is can be really challenging. But it has happened. It has happened a few times, or at least I've got to meet actresses that have been on like the same show as me, at least, even if they weren't the exact same character.
Because I know how, like Japanese voice acting schedules can be really hectic, so that's why it's sometimes hard for them to bring to America because they're almost always working.
Yeah.
Speaking of like big challenges, like I personally can't imagine how hard it was to adapt Nichijō for an English audience. And I'm curious about what some of the more challenging gags or lines that you had to record for the show.
Well, you know, you should have like a longer conversation with Howard Wang about that, who is the script adapter for Nichijō. He could probably really tell you what that was like since he was the actual adapter. But I will tell you that I never knew how to answer the question, what is your favorite anime? Because I love so many that I've done until this show. And all of a sudden, I had a number one in my spot in my heart forever until there's a new number one. Because, you know, you find new favorites. But it has, oh, God, I love that show so much. You know, what's cool about it, I will say, is that so much of the humor is so physical in the way that the animation is. That, like, it's still... I still feel like it's really translatable. It's already so funny the way that it's drawn and just the way that like all the characters are reacting to everything around them. So, you know, in such a big way, in such a ridiculous way. Yuko, I just love her so much. She's played by Morgan Lerae. I mean, just freaking out and, you know, everything that happens if you've seen any of it.
Oh, yeah. I own it on Blu-ray.
I think the hardest one, and you can ask Howard about this, but the one that comes to mind is when they're doing the Japanese wordplay. And they're not just doing wordplay. They're also writing it down on paper and passing it back and forth. So it wasn't just us being like, okay, we can do our own wordplay, sort of using some of the Japanese, you know what I mean?
It was
we had to find a way for this to also make sense with what's happening on the screen on the paper. And it was already like so inside jokes, you know, different. It was just so specific that like it was really, really difficult. that was one of the ones I think that was the most difficult that comes to mind. For me, I know there were probably a few others. I'm planning on like at some point doing like a rewatch and like, you know, maybe doing like in quarantine, maybe making that like something that I kind of like provide commentary on or something just because it is my favorite and I really want to watch it again.
Oh, yeah. You can do maybe do a whole live stream and have everybody watch alongside it.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that or something kind of like that. You know, I don't know how many people would be into it or not, but I mean, I would sit there and watch it because I love it. It's so funny. It's so good.
And I absolutely loved your portrayal as Hakase, the little tiny professor. how did you go about bringing so much adorableness to that role?
I just knew she was for me. And this is terrible because I directed it, right? So I was like, she is mine. She is mine. Like, she's, I don't know what it is about her. There's something about her that is so, like, my inner child, my inner me a little bit, that it's, like, really easy to do because whenever, I don't know, we all still have, like, our inner five-year-old in us, and it comes out a lot. And, like, that can so be me. Like, I can get so excited about certain things. And then I can get so whiny when I don't get my way, you know?
Right.
Like, I feel like there's something about me, and I've done characters like this on stage as well, and I have played a lot of brattier anime characters as well, but there's just something about her that was, like, so simple and easy for me to tap into, and maybe that's good and maybe that's bad, but I just found her humor, like, so perfect and easy for me. Like, I could play her forever, like, her and Kana from Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, I feel like I could play them forever. Like, I just love playing kids, like, around that age. Like, it's so fun and easy for me. And plus, I knew I was going to cast Monica Rial to play Nano, and I love playing opposite of her. I played opposite with her in several things, most notably in Michiko and Hachin. And I just feel like we have a really good chemistry. And then when you throw Anthony Bowling in there in the mix as our little black kitty cat.
Sakamoto,
like, come on. I mean, his comic timing is so epic. He was the very first person I knew that I was going to cast in that show. When I saw it, when it was put on my plate as a director, for some reason, like, that was the very first decision I had made. Like, others were harder for me to kind of figure out, but that one, like, popped into my head immediately, and I knew it was perfect, and I never looked back, and it was so perfect.
Yeah, then I'll be honest, like, that was, like, when I heard that Nichi Joe was getting a dub, like, that was, like, those were the two characters, Nano and Hakase, where I was like, all right, I'm hoping they do this right. And honestly, you and Monica were absolutely pitch perfect playing those two roles. Just, like you said, the chemistry between the two of you just fit perfectly with the two characters.
Well, thank you so much, because we had so much freaking fun making it. And then, you know, I had a really good time also directing the other three. What's cool is it just has, like, every lead is a comedic lead, right? Like,
right.
They all have their own brand of comedy. And so it's just finding that, like, perfect match. And getting to direct Morgan LeRae, Leah Clark, and Brittany Lauda as the other three, kind of the little trio,
right,
on the other side of the spectrum, was really, really fun too. Like, they killed me. Like, they made me laugh so much. That I think that's why I love it so much. It's like every day I came to work and I would just get to laugh and laugh and laugh at everyone's performances.
I don't know if you've ever read the original manga of Nichijou, but the creator of it, Kiachi Arari, he has a new series that's out right now called City. I don't know if you ever get a chance to sit down and read stuff. Read City. It blows everything that Nichijou has done out of the water.
I have to check it out. And then I have to hope that maybe that they'll make an anime, because what's cool about Nichijou is it took one of his other works,
Helvetica Standard.
Yeah, it submitted Helvetica Standard in there, which was always just so random and weird, but I loved it still. Like, it would just come out of nowhere. It was so strange. And, like, the person who I remember having Hayden Davio in, and she ended up being one of our narrators. The show had so many narrators, and I tried to keep them the same when it made sense. And so she was one of our main narrators for part of the Helvetica Standards that we did, where she would just say, like, the strangest, most off, like, phrases, but, like, with a smiley commercial sound, you know? And it would just, it was great. It was such a fun time.
Yeah, it is a great dub. If you listeners haven't had a chance to listen to it, please do. Either get it on Blu-ray, or you can even stream it on the Fandomation website. Now, one role that you just brought up recently, one of my favorite anime of the last 10 years, Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, the character of Kana. And what I love about Kana is that she's a very, very innocent kind of character, but yet at the same time, she has these moments where it's like she's kind of adult. And was there a balance you had to find when it came to getting her voice and attitude right when playing her?
I mean, yeah, sometimes. But again, I don't know. She's just one of those ones that's so, I just slip right into it. And that must say something about me. Like, I'm sure if I worked it out in, like, therapy, I could figure it out. But I just love that subtle dark humor, you know, like just that little, like, you know, pinch of salt in the sugar, you know, I mean, because she is who she is and she's kind of fiercely protective. And, like, I think that's where most of her instincts come from, you know, is that she wants to fiercely protect. But then when she gets the opportunity to actually be coddled and loved by someone else, like, it just softens her up even more. You know, and, you know, she's just everyone's favorite little squishy dragon. And I mean, I love her, you know, I found it so fun to, like, be talking like a child and then sometimes saying the very adult things that she would say.
Right. Because when you first kind of introduced her, I mean, you see her a little bit in the first episode, but then in the second episode, she enters, she's talking to Kobayashi and she's calling her words that someone, well, yo, in human years, 7 years old, probably should not be saying.
Yeah, no, nuh-uh. But that's what's fun. She's like their own little baby Yoda, right? Like, like, she's wise beyond her years in some ways.
I think we technically have to call her the child. They don't like using baby Yoda over at Disney, apparently.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yes.
That's like what culturally he's known as, though. Come on.
Yes, he's Baby Yoda. Now, yeah. I know you're talking about having a blast recording with Nichijou, but like one dub that I thought that you guys did a really great job with, one that sounded like you had a lot of fun with, was with How Not to Summon a Demon Lord, where you played Best Cat Girl Rem. Do shows like that always have that sort of fun and positive vibe when you're working on them?
I'm just going to go ahead and say probably not always, not 100% of the time. I think it really depends on the team that's involved with it. And having Jeremy Inman at the helm on that one, and Leah Clark as the adaptive script writer, like, and the team of actors in place, like, I just think it made it more fun, you know, being able to kind of to goof around and play within those characters, you know, with the crazy situations they got into and the weirdness that ensued with the whole premise of the show to begin with. You know, I just had a great time. Like, I always have a great time working with Inman, like, because he likes to cast me in comedic roles, you know, and I always really enjoy that. And he lets me play around and do stupid things sometimes, and sometimes they make their way in. And sometimes they don't, you know, but we always get to play and have fun.
And you mentioned Leah Clark adapting the script, and I really thought you guys did a great job with adapting it and voicing it. What I found really funny is just like how it's a world that's supposed to be this kind of medieval world, and yet you have some of these characters like calling each other as like douche or douchebag. So I always found that really hilarious.
Yeah, the juxtaposition can be really funny, but, you know, because it is like a, you know, a game world of sorts, you know. I think it's fine to introduce that language, and mostly also because it's a comedy, you know?
Right, right.
You know, having those like sort of out there phrasings or what works, right? Like, just brings the comedy and makes it land even harder in that way.
Absolutely. I'm going to try to word this question as carefully as I can regarding How Not to Summon a Demon Lord. Were you surprised that they went there when they awoke in Krebs Skull?
I think I was very aware that it was coming, and like we had already been making all kinds of jokes about it. Like, I've already been making like terrible jokes about like season two, like about Shocker and all that. Like,
yeah,
you know, I forget. I feel like I had a really good joke and I lost it, but it was, you know, something about like season two, Shocker twice, like some sort of like, I don't know, some sort of like what the tagline should be for, you know, like, because my motto on that show is like, stuff like that is almost too awful to laugh at, but like if you just lean into it, I don't know,
right?
It's so dumb. It's literally so dumb that you have to laugh at it.
Yeah, I remember when I first saw it happen, like the first thing that popped in my head was, you know, that little kid song. Oh, there's a hole in the cute cat girl lolly. There's a hole in the cute cat girl lolly.
Well, I definitely haven't heard that version.
So, you've mentioned you've worked as an ADR director for many shows. This is a weird segue, by the way, from going from this to this.
Yeah, this is terrible. This is a terrible segue.
Yes, I'm sorry. But I do have to say that your best work behind the scenes was still one of my favorite shows, Interviews with Monster Girls. And what I loved about the show was just how great of an analogy the series served for kids with both physical and mental disabilities. And I'm wondering if that's something that came to mind when you were working on this series.
Very much so. It was talked about a lot. And I think when we were actually doing it, like it was brought up a lot on panels because people just really found it relatable in that way, you know? Because, you know, none of us are literal vampires or Doulahans or succubi or anything, but we right. all have insecurities, and we all, you know, some of us have, you know, serious things that we're dealing with to try and fit in and like find our tribe, find our family, you know, our chosen family, not our given family. And so it was very much a part of the narrative of how we kind of approached it and thought about it, like, in a relatable way.
Absolutely. Because so for me, because I really related a lot to the character of Hikari, because I'm on the autism spectrum, and I find that Hikari actually had some aspects of, not purposely, but like vampire-y aspects that kind of were relatable to those who were on the autism spectrum. So like, I was really blown away by how much of a good analogy of that character was from like being a vampire to a disability that some people can truly relate to.
Absolutely. And you know, you're not the first person who's kind of drawn that analogy, drawn that like kind of line between the two things. Like I have had other like fans of the show and people come up to me and kind of talk to me about that stuff. And I think that's really cool that there's an anime, you know, like that, that's relatable to all different types of people, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's what's great about anime is that people can find something that they relate to so much in any sort of character, you know, depending on, you know, it's a good character, of course, not like some like super evil character, but like, and like a lot of these like slice of lifestyle shows, you can see something or someone that's sort of a reflection as to who you are. And sometimes it like opens your mind up and you kind of become a better person after watching what happens.
Well, here's hoping. I mean, I think that, you know, that bullying scene, that some of the bullying that happened in the show was really important to kind of talk about that aspect of it and yeah. Kind of, you know, have these friends be there for each other, because I mean, that's something that happens all the time, you know,
right.
In high school and in middle school and, you know, any age of school, but like, just to address that and kind of have it represented in anime and represented in a way where you can relate and you can find the heart in it.
It's amazing that I see like bullying in anime, whether it's in like Interviews with Monster Girls or in a film like A Silent Voice, and just how well they capture that feeling of what it is like to be bullied. And they do it in such a way that, like, it's hard to find something in a live-action production that has captured something as strongly as this, compared to something that you'd see in an anime.
That's interesting. I don't know what to say about that exactly, but I'm just glad that it is represented in that. I think that the show, the animation and the story and the actors all portrayed it in such a beautiful way. And of course the anime, like it all kind of turns around in like a nice sweet bow. And that's, you know, not always the case, but I did like the way that the story flowed and how the bullies in kind of towards the end almost became a bigger group of friends for the girls.
Right. I mean, even towards the end, like they kind of stepped up for the girls and even for the teacher as well, letting the advisor or the principal know that how important this teacher is to helping better the experience of school life for these three monster girls.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You've played many characters on many types of shows, from the serious and the funny to even the most fan servicey. Which character or even series would you say has been, let's say, the most interesting to work on?
I mean, it's really hard to say, but I will say like one that popped into my head, because a few popped into my head, but because they can be, you know, interesting for various reasons. But I think I'm going to go with Death Parade. I'm playing Nona in Death Parade. I've never been a part of an anime like that one. It was such a different way of storytelling, and where I still think even in the end, most of the lead characters are a mystery, you know? And it's just like, it leaves so much unanswered, and like, it just made me want more. I want to know more about the character that I played. I want to know more about the more reoccurring characters that she interacted with. I liked the world building, but it was still so mysterious, but it still left me wanting to know more about like how that particular version of the afterlife and the levels of whatever version of that afterlife were like.
it's such a great show. Like, what I love about it too is it kind of like there's a sort of 180, because you watch the show and the first thing you see is that amazing, really catchy, dancey theme song, but then like the rest of the show is like it's kind of funny, but like it's mostly sad, and like you learn about the characters and why they are down there, and it's really eye-opening.
Yeah, it's an emotional ride for sure. And it's cool because it has really super interesting storylines and episodic characters along with all of the mains who kind of drag you along, like not ever really letting you into the full spectrum of their story.
Odds are you can't discuss what you're working on at the moment. Besides, I know you mentioned Nekopara that you're working on the dub, but I am curious to know what you are enjoying this current anime season.
Well, I mean, I can tell you what I'm doing because it's not very much right now in quarantine.
True.
Quarantine has kind of, you know, slowed things down a bit for now, even though we are getting the hang of it. I am ADR directing Nekopara. I am acting in My Hero Academia. I do have one secret of something that I'm acting in that'll probably come out in the next couple of weeks, a newer role. But that's what I've been doing. And believe it or not, it's kind of taking up the majority of my time. There's something about this at-home life and this like current state that we're in that just, I don't know, for me, can like, it takes every ounce of my energy to give to those things that I'm giving it to, you know? And then I just feel like, even though like I'm at home, it's for some reason, it's almost more draining in a way. I think just like with the stress of like everything that's happening in the world. So I'm just enjoying every opportunity that I get to like be inside my own home booth. And I was so excited to get to direct again, because it meant at least if I couldn't see all the people, I could hear all their voices again of all my, you know, coworkers and friends and things like that. And that's been really, really helpful.
That's good. I know it could be a little bit stressful. Even though I always work from home when it comes to recording podcasts and writing articles and such, but I can totally get that whole kind of like stressful situation that's going on outside my window. Because normally I like to sometimes get out and actually do my writings and such outdoors, but you really can't be doing that too much in this current situation.
Yeah, and even though I'm in like an introvert, I don't know. I think I'm more of a ambivert a little bit, because I do, you know, feed off the energy of all the creativity that's around me when I'm at the studio and getting to like be with all of those people and like create what we're creating. And so I really, really miss that.
Absolutely. I totally relate to the introvertedness, but like I still miss going out to like, you know, concerts or movie theater or see a play or anything like that, because you get so much energy to create your own stuff after you witness all that stuff. And I can understand where you're coming from in regards to that, with not being able to be at Funimation or Sentai and recording the roles there.
Yeah, I miss people. I do. I miss them a lot.
Me too. So out of all the roles that you've had in the past, which character have you resonated most with?
Golly, I'm so bad at these questions. I find a way to resonate with everyone. I mean, like I said, I love Hakase. I love Hachin. I will say that more recently, like in the past year, I don't know if resonating is the right word, but I've really enjoyed getting to play and getting to know Saki Hanajima from Fruits Basket. She's just, I'm not really like her at all, but but I just really like her. Like, I like what she stands for and what she's about and like how true to herself she is. And I think that ideal resonates with me, like that ideal of being so who you are that you're just like, F everyone else. Like, you know, I'm going to be me. And like getting to see her backstory of like, it wasn't always that clear for her, you know, I think is very relatable, you know, that who you are and like how you got there. It's not always that clear, you know, but I just like that she's so who she is, because I feel like that's a really good message that, you know, you can just stand in who you are no matter what that looks like or is like for anyone else. Like, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks about it. Like, you're you.
Mm. And it's amazing that we actually are getting this reboot of Fruits Basket, because I remember 20 years ago when Funimation was actually trying to get the fans on board with creating a second season for the original. And now we're getting the opportunity to see a much more fuller and complete Fruits Basket happening. Like, what goes through your mind seeing something that was cherished 20 years ago being brought back to the forefront of the anime community like Fruits Basket?
I mean, I was just excited to get to be a part of it. I kind of found out in like a weird way that I was even going to get to be a part of it, because I thought it was cool that it was coming back, because it was one of the first anime that I had ever even heard of, you know? And knowing that like a lot of the same people would be coming back on board was really, really cool that many years later. But I didn't really have any idea that I was going to be a part of it until I got an email like asking me all these questions for kind of like a marketing campaign type of thing that they were putting out. And I was like, hey, I think you sent this to the wrong person. Like, I haven't recorded for the show. I'm not in the cast. And they were like, oh, yeah, you're going to play this character. Sorry, we thought that you had already recorded something. So it was like an accidental, like, you've been cast. And I just replied, like, in all caps, like, ah! I was really excited. It was really cool because I didn't think that that opportunity would even be available.
All right. And you're also acting with the original cast from the 2000 version or the like 2003 version of there, having like Laura Bailey involved and such. So what is it like to be working again or working alongside her and the old cast on this brand new version?
It's really cool. You know, I've never even met her, but it's really cool to get to act against her when I hear her voice in the booth. And it's been neat with kind of me and her and Elizabeth Maxwell being that little trio of friends. Has been really neat because Elizabeth and I are both the new kids, you know, to the show. And then our anchor is Laura. So it's been really nice to have that anchor to play off of.
Well, I know fans are very excited about Fruits Basket. They're excited about all these other shows that you have been a big part of. My final question that I like to ask, this might be the toughest question, besides the resonated one, and it's something I like to call Three Character Island. And that question is, if you have found yourself stuck on a deserted island, which three characters that you have played in the past would you like to have with you to keep you safe and sane until your imminent rescue, and why?
Oh my gosh, I really should have thought about this one beforehand. Did not at all. Because, you know what? Okay, wait. Megumi? Because she's going to find me some amazing food and help cook for me, because you know I don't like cooking. So I've got to go with my girl Megumi. That's number one. I think I'll go with Haru. She's the cat that I played in My Roommate is a cat.
Yes.
Because I love cats, so I could have some company with me on the island. And then, man, I need someone, like, resourceful. I'm trying to think. I don't know who's super resourceful. Maybe this one came to mind, and I would really have to look at a list. I probably could come up with something different. But Guri from Love Tyrant, I mean, she's a freaking angel, so I'm sure she could, like, figure something out and make me laugh and be wacky and fun and you know, like God's like her dad, right? So it's cool. Like, we'll figure it out.
Either that or you just spend your day, hey, I'm going to make these two people fall in love. All right, let's watch it happen.
Yeah.
Jake, thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One. For our listeners, if they want to keep track on what you're currently working on, what's the best way they can find all that information?
Well, I'm all over the social media. You can find me on Instagram at Jaderade, at J-A-D-A-R-A-D-E, like Gatorade. And I'm also on Twitter at Jade B. Saxton, and Facebook, Jade Saxton Voice Actress, or Voice Actor, sorry. I can't remember if it's actor or actress for some reason. But yeah, I usually try and keep up with stuff there to know about, like, you know, when conventions come back and, like, new shows and stuff like that.
Awesome.
And just my daily life and photos of my cat.
Jade, thank you once again. Best of luck with everything that's going on right now, and I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to hearing you play some of your favorite characters in the near future.
Thank you so much, Evan. I appreciate you having fun.
You're welcome.
Everybody, put your hands up, softly lighting it. 翼になれ、見ていたいな、夢中になれる君、今が成長。